Well, good morning and welcome everyone to Live Dharma Sunday for February 23rd, 2014. Koyo Kubota here. So very glad you joined us. I imagine that many of us have been enjoying the Winter Olympics. And it's certainly nice that it can be taped nowadays. We're all so spoiled. I think we all do the similar things where we fast forward. We tape the thing and then we fast forward so that we could make the best use of viewing time and see if only the events that we would like to watch. And I don't think anything's wrong with that. I remember I've given several Dharma talks about Olympics and well, sports in general, but also specifically about the Olympics or even the Special Olympics, how everybody's a champion, you know. And since I used to do this for Dharma school children, and I would do corny things, you know, we have a ready excuse to be silly when giving a talk if we say it's for the children. And that's a great excuse to be ourselves, and everybody enjoys it. And I remember playing, you know, Rocky, the movie, was a story about doing one's best, giving one's all, and in line with the theme of everyone's a champion. That's the message of that movie. And theme song is Flying High. You could maybe hear that melody, but I made a tape of it and I played it and I danced around on the altar area there giving the Dharma talk for the children. And of course we're all champions because we all have Buddha nature. You know, there's all kinds of interpretations you could make of this, or how you can apply it. And I remember my wife Adrian said that one of the messages she really remembered and it really impacted her was when I talked about there was an article giving a backstory about an athlete who was dedicating the Olympics to a sibling that had passed away. And this is not uncommon. Everybody... So many athletes have lost or someone or have went through some personal tragedy, and they used it to as a springboard to dedicate their performance, their training. When a person singles out or focuses or highlights something, said this really affected me, somehow you take a closer look at it, you know. And that's a nice way to introduce a message where someone might say, I was reading a book and there was a story there, a teaching story, and this really impressed me and so forth, and then they talk about it. And you somehow receive it at a deeper level. Maybe this is a variation of, there was a commercial about how you really listen to other people's conversations. Maybe you're on a subway and someone says, two strangers are talking, but saying, and saying, this really was important. And you somehow pay attention to something that's not being directly addressed to you, but, oh, this was important to this person. What was it? Or there was that commercial where the person's giving advice and he whispers it, some financial advice, right? And you really listen. You want to get in on it. So when someone says, well, this really was a great teaching for me, somehow you could relate. Oh, yes, I'm a truth seeker. I'm on a spiritual path, too. And through word of mouth or personal experiences, personal stories, and so forth, we really share. We feel that there's a sharing there, a worthwhile teaching. I remember one last thing about, just came to my mind about these backstories, which is really puts a face, personal face on these athletes, what they experienced. Maybe they were going to give up on the sport, and then this happened in their lives, and it led to this. Okay. And one person said that he was, you know, he had suffered injuries and ready to give up on his sport, which I think was skating. And in fact, he did put it down. And he pursued other things, and one of the things was music. And he became friends with a musician, and the musician influenced him and inspired him to go back to skating. One of the things that influenced him is that he was introduced to the idea of 10,000 reps. There's a story that goes like, if you want to master something, a skill, whether it's the instrument or whatever it is, you have to put in 10,000 reps or hours, 10,000 practices. And then I was thinking, wow, you know, supposing you, what about the Dharma? If you want to really have a significant impact on your spiritual growth, your path, is there some spiritual tools, some helpful things that could help us deepen our spiritual life? Maybe 10,000 reps. You want to really learn how to do gassho. Well, let's say you do, I don't think many of us do daily gassho, really. Now, we're supposed to do it at each meal. In Japanese, we say itadakimasu, meaning we recognize the interdependency and that was involved in what made this food possible. So we're practicing interdependence, awareness of interdependency and gratitude. And we put our hands together at mealtime. But I don't think most of us do that three times a day. Okay? Now maybe I'm selling some of you short. Okay? Do you do gassho three times a day? I mean, even if you did three times a day, let's say roughly 1,000 in a year, right? Over 300 so many days in a year, you round it off to maybe you did 1,000 gassho's total in 1 year. Well, that'd take you 10 years to make 10,000. 10 years of gassho just to learn how to do gassho. Really do gassho, okay? Not just the mindless, mechanical, okay, ritual, of course. Well, those are just some of my thoughts about associated with Winter Olympics. Well, today we have a guest speaker to give us a Dharma glimpse. It's Dave Nichio. Nichio is his Dharma name. Nichi means every day. And Yo, of course, means the sun. The sun rises, and sunrise, dawn, bright dawn every day. We want to make it everyday teachings. Right? Let the light shine every day. He lives in Illinois. He was part of our LM2 group. And indeed, I just heard that when he was contacting us to record his Dharma Glimpse for today's show, you had told Adrian, who coordinates these things, that he's been doing archery. And I remember when he came a few years ago, came for a lay minister's conference we had here at Bright Dawn in Coarse Gold, that he was into archery, and also with his son. But he's getting serious about it. He started to compete in it. And in fact, when he said that he was really into archery, I had just bought a bow some months ago. Just for the heck of it, on Craigslist, I bought a bow and some arrows. And so we went into our corral area where the previous owners, they had built a corral where they had two horses. My garden is in there, but it's a pretty large area, and I had stacked some hay straw bales there. So during this conference, three or four of us participants, we said, for the heck of it, since Dave was into archery, we shot the bows and shot the arrows into the hay bales, and it's kind of fun. And of course, there's Budo, the Zen of archery. And that's a traditional art in Japan, too. Very special training of focused awareness. If you want to be a real good shooter, you can't be thinking about the result. You got to lose yourself. Let the arrow shoot itself. These kinds of things, you can see how it could get into the oneness of any kind of a sport or anything. How to arrange flowers, how to make a bowl of tea, how to shoot an arrow. And if you Google Japanese archery, you could see some of what they do. It's a very cultural, very different than archery in the West, by the way. Different bows and different techniques, different drawing technique. And you could tell that it's done very mindfully. And it's a discipline. Maybe it'll take you 20,000 reps to learn how to shoot the bow properly, much less hit a target. Well, I'm rambling on and on. Let's hear today from Dave Michio.
Thanks for inviting me today. My Dharma glimpse is called Letting Go and Letting Down. My older son takes Aikido. He's been doing so for about a year and a half. I've never taken it, but I've studied Kung Fu and Karate, but Aikido really intrigues me. I watch the students go through their drills. One student grabs the other, and before you know it, his wrist is being twisted, and then he's on the ground. I might have only a superficial understanding of Aikido based solely on my observations, but it seems that the effectiveness of the moves are often wholly dependent on your opponent or attacker grabbing your wrist or arm and holding on to it. I'm always asking myself, why don't they just let go? I find myself wondering if the urge to grasp is not some deeply ingrained psychological need or instinctual physical reaction. Why do we hold on to things that don't help us? I do archery as a hobby and sometimes shoot in tournaments. I'm decent and often fare pretty well. About a year or so ago, I was in a tournament. I shot pretty well, but I had 7 bad arrows out of the 60. I won my division, but was disappointed because I could have shot much better. After the tournament, as I thought about my shots, I had to admit to myself that almost all of them were because I refused to let down. When you are shooting, sometimes the shot doesn't feel right, or you hold it a little too long, or you just have an itch out of the tip of your nose that's driving you crazy. When this happens, the smart thing is to slowly let out the string, regroup, and start over after a few seconds rest. This is called letting down. But this is so hard for me to do. I'll hold on, tough it out, and just get a shot off. Sometimes a bullseye, but more often errant. All this while there's a voice inside me saying, be smart, Dave, be smart, let down. But I seldom do. I think this urge to grasp things and hold them tight permeates our emotional life. It's the root of much of our unhappiness. After that tournament, I stopped at a tattoo parlor on the way home and got a target tattooed on my arm. Underneath it are the words, be smart. Of course, I'm still not. Even that, with that permanent reminder on my forearm, I still find myself doing things I know make no sense or even self-destructive. In archery, I've begun practicing letting down. Where I let down once every few seconds, every few shots, whether I need to or not. I've come to realize that this inability to let down is not very different than the person in Aikido who holds on to that wrist or the person who holds on to their anger or disappointment. This has also made me think that letting go and letting down are often related. We so often have unrealistic expectations for ourselves. I recently turned 50 and I'm at that point in my life where I have aging parents, teenagers, and fairly significant responsibilities at work. In short, I have a lot of demands on my time, yet I haven't adjusted my expectations. I still want to run a 20-minute 5K and win every tournament I'm in. It'd be good to have a spotless house as well, but I don't have time. The competitiveness that always pushed me to do things better is becoming an albatross around my neck. At work, I believe in not making perfection the enemy of good, but it's hard to do at home and in my personal life. I worry about letting down my kids, my parents and siblings, my coworkers, and myself. Just like in archery, I think that we need to accept that letting down is not a bad thing. I think I should start leaving that last dish in the sink every once in a while at least. Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah. Adrian, I didn't know he was going to talk about archery. I'm glad I mentioned it. I think letting go is a tremendously important teaching. And it reminded me about the way it was expressed when the Buddha was asked, when the Buddha was alive and he was spreading the Dharma and he was traveling around, of course, walking around India and to villages and talking. People would ask him, well, what do you have? Okay. What do you have to offer? What did you experience? And you went through some training. Well, he did it himself, but, you know, you went on this spiritual path in this journey. What did you learn? What do you have to offer? What did you get? Show me, tell me what your brand of wisdom is that you acquired as a result of all your spiritual efforts. And the Buddha, in this one account that I read, said he didn't get anything. He didn't acquire some wisdom, in a sense. So the question sort of says, well, what's the purpose of, sometimes if you take a workshop or a retreat, oh man, that was great. Someone might say, the common question would be, hey, what did you get out of it? The point has been made that many times if we seriously reflect on something, and in fact, this was a observation made about a cultural difference between East and the West. This is, of course, gross generalization, but in the West, it's so common that you want to grab something. You want to get something, right? This is what I got in this retreat and workshop. This is what I learned. This is the insight I have. I acquired this. Whereas the person noticed that when he asked an Easterner what he experienced about in this retreat, the person was not so joyously saying, "Hey, this was a great retreat. I learned this. I got this." But the experience was he learned the truth about himself that he would rather not have learned. That was the impact. Something was exposed to him. Something was taken away from him. His inflated sense of control and mastery in his own life, his clinging to his own pride about things and boosting his self-esteem in some fashion, that he was making progress. We do make progress, but it's a different kind of progress, because there was an effect, learning effect, but it was a different kind of process. Not only a different kind of process, but it's processed differently, your experience, your attitude, your approach. Almost 180 degree difference. Completely opposite. Not, what did I get? Ooh, this is a gem that I got. But something was taken away. Something was that you were shown that, hey, you better let go of these things. So you lost something. That's a significant. And so going back to my original story, the Buddha said, "No, I didn't get anything." But what I did experience was I let go. Well, the Buddha said, "No, I let go of resentment, craving. I let go of, you know, all these things." So maybe it's just a matter of expression or style, in a sense. But the approach, I think, is very important. Okay. Not so much acquisition, okay, but it's seeing what's in you right now, and being able to let it go. That's why in Buddhism, what is the method? Maybe in other religions say, well, the method is prayer, or this, or, you know, faith, or blind faith in a sense. Don't question, you got to believe. If it's in the Bible, boom, that's the truth. Okay. The method is to praise God, to learn to fear God, sometimes they might even be put it. What is the method? In Buddhism, the method is self-introspection. The material is right there. And so it's almost opposite. Instead of looking outside, externally for something, you look inside yourself. Not to find something, but to be able to let go of something. That's what's causing the problem. This is a different attitude toward, let's say, problem solving. It's not finding the answer, really. The mode of operation, your modus operandi, is to find out the interfering mental sets that keep you from thinking in the box all the time, and to lessen its hold on you, to learn to let go of, to find those meta-assumptions that's directing how you approach the problem or how you approach life, how you are approaching your own spiritual path. Hey. Very, very good. That's all for today's broadcast. Till next time, you keep going, and you have a very wonderful day. Thank you.